Susan Watt, News Radio 1180 WHAM, proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000 Watt 1180 WHAM.
No, I'm not Nick Francesco, and yes, this is another great Sunday morning in Rochester, and yes, you folks are listening to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
Dave, I didn't hear the order we were doing.
I know, I did not.
I'm doing it in the order we're sitting, yeah.
Well, some habits are hard to break, and just to let you folks know, we got Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software, who's going to be on the show today and talking about some really neat products that he was showing to us. But before we get into that, and before we get to your phone calls, you know, each week, folks, you keep hearing us talk about different news articles and everything else. Well, one I happened to dig up was that, you know, we keep telling you, do Firefox. Well, there's a survey that just came out, and it turns out that Mozilla has wound up doing 26% fewer
vulnerabilities.
Thank you. I have a problem rolling that one out.
That's what you got here, me here for.
Hits and issues. It just does things a lot neater. Like we keep telling you folks, you can sit there and block stuff. You know, your control, even with another product along with Firefox, is the Thunderbird. It does a better job of keeping out the junk mail. So between the two, Firefox keeping out the spam and all those pop-ups and everything else versus, you know, using IE, whether it's IE 6 or 7, it still just does a better job, so there's really no issues to contend with. I mean, it just runs, and it does a great job, and you don't have all those other hassles. So you might want to really give it a look. And here's the other misconception. I run into this, and I don't know, Steve, you must run into it quite a bit, too, is a lot of folks say, well, IE came on my machine. That's the only one I can use, right?
And they don't know that it is Internet Explorer. How many times do we ask what browser you're using? They don't know. They just click the button on their desktop,
just came
which
with their
by
machine,
default
and
is
that's
IE.
What they use. But here's the secret, folks. Don't tell anybody. You can use as many different browsers as you want.
At the same time.
You can have IE open. You can have Netscape open. You can have Firefox open. What's some of the others?
Opera.
I mean, there's just so many out there. And yes, you can have them all on there. And most of them will import all your bookmarks and all that. If you're using, say, Internet Explorer at first, it'll import them and you can use them all.
Although some people use a browser upgrade as a way to clean out their bookmarks. You've been bookmarking so many hundreds of things over the years that
true.
You can't find the ones you really want now.
Okay, with that, folks, so seriously, if you've been hunting around and thinking about looking at another browser, seriously, go to Mozilla.com. I know we've got a link off of our webpage, and we constantly tell you to go there. Check it out and try it out. If you don't like it, worst case scenario, like anything else, you can always uninstall it. All right, let's tell you what. Let's go to the phones, and we got Steve from Rochester. Go ahead, Steve.
Guys, how you doing?
We're doing just peachy. How about yourself?
Well, I'm fine, except for a computer problem. It's a little over a week old. I've been away a little, so I haven't noticed it as much. When I use a search engine, primarily Google, I get the correct responses, you know, and when I go to click on the links, I'm jumped to some other search engine, and sometimes the topics are related, sometimes they aren't. I can always cut and paste the reference at the bottom in, and it'll go to it, but I haven't been able to figure out how to fix this, and I've done the Tango and everything, and it hasn't gone away.
What search engine do you primarily use?
I use Google almost all the time. I've only tried a couple others just to see if I have the
problem. What browser?
I'm on Internet Explorer.
Okay.
That sounds like a browser hijack.
Yeah.
What happens sometimes, there's two possible issues. If you spell Google wrong, you can end up with
No, and I'm in Google. I've checked that.
Yeah, if you spell any website wrong, you can often end up with fake websites.
No, I'm in a real Google site. I'm pretty sure of that.
But oftentimes, especially with Internet Explorer, because of all the vulnerabilities in it, your browser can get hijacked. And so instead of sending a request to Google, it's sending it to this other site to try to load you with more spyware. I would check your Internet options.
Yeah, try cleaning out the cache.
Check your homepage settings and your search page settings for Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
Empty your cache. Empty your temp files.
Yeah, clear that out.
Or stop using Internet Explorer, as we were just talking about. But as a test even, just try Firefox and see if the same thing happens there.
Okay.
I mean, that's a simple way,
You know, I found something online describing it, but it's one of these sort of blog things where people throw in, and they say they run this program called Hijack and then post your results.
Well, Hijack This will tell you everything that's going on in your computer.
You've got to know what you're doing.
Right, and 99% of the people have no idea what
that's
any of it
means.
That's
where I am, right. Yeah.
Tell you what, listen a little bit later on. I'm going to have another, in my story hour, I got another great product that I want to talk to folks about, and we'll be talking about that, so stay tuned.
But try Firefox and see if the same thing happens. If it does, there's something embedded in your system.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen in Firefox, then something is embedded in Internet Explorer.
Yeah, that's a good way to try and isolate it, because it probably is specifically hijacking Internet Explorer. Mm-hmm. So if you try Firefox and it doesn't happen, you know that there's something in your system that shouldn't be there.
Well, that's the thing. Like we were talking about, most folks don't realize they get, IE built on the machine, and that's what they use. They don't know that they can use other things, and it always amazes me.
Got one more question about this. I looking through, my computer just to check my program files.
Yeah, go ahead.
About the time this happened, well, first off, I had installed Corel X3. And then after that, about a month after that, I have something called Viewpoint in a folder. Under my computer. I have no idea what that is. Does that ring a bell with anybody?
V-U-E?
V-I-E-W.
V-I-E-W.
Let me just check it one more time here, and I'm wondering if that has something to do with it or not.
Yeah, Viewpoint is an internet marketing technology company. That means it's spyware that installs on your computer to track your website you're going to, and probably that could be what's hijacking your search engine, because it wants you to go to their websites to generate their traffic. Yeah.
So I could try uninstalling that too?
No, it's I don't know if you're going to be able to uninstall.
Yeah, there may not be an uninstaller.
Yeah. Fair enough.
The actual name of the program is appears to be viewmgr.exe, but the Viewpoint Media Player. It's a marketing company that it's all the innocuousness that wasn't intended to be bad, but the bad guys are using it for bad things, and it's how a lot of web traffic pays for the website by putting this marketing data on.
Well, give that a try, Steve. By the sounds of the tones here, we got to take a short break. So the rest of your listeners that are on the line, stay on the line. We'll get back to you soon, right after this. Yes, folks, you're back to Sound Bites, and I am Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And just to let you know, Nick wound up taking the weekend off. The guy has been working his butt off and needed a little time off, and I can't say I blame him. So, Nick, I hope you're home resting and just taking it easy. You deserve it, guy. And we'll get back to the phones.
He's got an ISDN line at home. Can he? He can still join us.
No, that's the whole purpose.
Well, no, he can still be in bed with his Mai Tai and be on the air with us.
Yeah, but like we've said before, and I've said it before, folks kept saying, well, why did we change dates and everything else, from a Saturday to a Sunday? It's inconvenient for me. And, wait a minute. What do you think it does to our lives? For me, I mean, I don't have any little kids. You've got a young son at home. Nick's got a daughter. Oh, they do the market on Saturday. So Sundays is his day here doing the show. Once in a while, we like to take a time off and, kick back and relax.
And we haven't been bumped by a sports schedule in, 2 years since we moved to Sunday?
Yeah, and that's the key thing. We're here. We're here every Sunday from 11 to 1. That's the time I go to church. I keep telling them, change church time. There's different masses. You can go to an earlier church time.
Yeah.
We can't do it. Our show is from 11 to 1. We're here, and you should be listening to our gospel. And with that, let's go to
Preach
Dan.
Preach it, Dave.
Let's go to Dan in Rochester. Go ahead, Dan.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate it. I'm trying to dance the security tango, and when I follow.
Did you get off to the right step? With your left foot?
Ah, good point. When I follow the directions to the letter, as soon as I go to reboot in safe mode, it freezes up. It gets to the point where it shows me the drivers up on the screen, and that's it. The computer locks up.
All right,
it won't go any farther.
Does it run all right in regular mode?
Well, no, that's why I'm dancing.
I would say, yeah. So sometimes the spyware and whatnots get so deeply embedded in the system, you can't even do it in safe mode. And then you basically take that drive out of the computer and put it on another computer you can boot with and scan it.
Yeah, that's usually what we have to do. I had one in just this past week that was so infested. What was it? Close to 378 viruses, just alone.
Yeah.
Well, I'm running Windows XP. I run a Linksys router. I run a software firewall. I run the antivirus every night, and I run all the anti-spyware that's listed in the Security Tango. Mm-hmm. I run it religiously, and it still seems that I'm getting pretty infected.
What browser are you using?
I use Mozilla, and my wife uses Internet Explorer.
Get her to stop using Internet Explorer.
Okay.
That's where your spyware and viruses are coming from. Well, at least the spyware, maybe not viruses.
But there's
and the
so
same
many...
thing. Same thing with email. Stop using Outlook Express if you are, and use Mozilla Thunderbird or Eudora or Pegasus or any of the other email programs.
And the thing that is though is I think we're starting to see not so many viruses as we are Trojans and spam.
Yeah. The viruses aren't passing as rapidly anymore because all the internet service providers, the ISPs, are catching them before they pass on through the email. So it's mostly the Trojans that come down from peer-to-peer networks with kids usually trying to steal music on LimeWire.
Or IMing.
You know, you get a file through IM. A lot of viruses pass through IM now. But the bigger problem now is becoming spyware coming in through Internet Explorer when you often accidentally go to a unsavory website. And sometimes, as our earlier caller was, like Viewpoint or what's the other one, the Gator or the Gain Network. There's two or three marketing companies that they will install software when you buy like a free something or other. You get this marketing program too, and that's why the software is free, because the marketing company is collecting marketing data. And in general, that isn't a bad thing, but there are bad marketing companies that then put so much spyware on your system that too many things are trying to check your marketing data and just bog your system down. And some of them get so embedded in the machine that you can't remove them on that machine. You actually have to put the hard drive in another computer.
Yeah.
And there was actually a recent article about this that the majority of the spyware and spam is originating from the United States. A lot of other countries get blamed for it, but the majority of it comes from inside the U.S.
Through servers in China.
In terms of where it's actually coming from. There's an article on Slashdot recently discussing it, and they were saying that, according to what they had uncovered, a lot of the spyware and the kind of things that we've discussed, people have called here and had problems with, are from entrepreneurs who had legitimate businesses in the beginning and just kind of went over to the dark side and went a little bit too far in terms of the way they were doing things.
Yeah, I've seen interviews with crackers that were talking about legitimate marketing companies will pay them, say, $1 a piece for
Absolutely.
Every email they send out or every website they send out. And so this one cracker said that he works an hour a day, an hour a week, and runs a zombie net of 10,000 zombies loading thousands of websites. And so he gets several thousand dollars a week.
And that's actually, you raise a key point, is all these zombie machines, it's mom and pop who they've got a Windows machine that they don't keep updated. And they don't know it, but some kid, somewhere in the U.S. or elsewhere in the world controls their machine. And the majority of the spam and a lot of these viruses and things like that come from compromised machines that your average person owns, which is why, not just for your own use, but for the whole community, keeping your system up to date in terms of software and firewalls and virus protection, it's critical.
Yeah, because it does it in the background.
Yep.
So you can be doing it on. You could be working on the machine. It seems a little slow. Yeah, because a zombie machine is literally stealing milliseconds from your processor to do its work too, besides what you're working on.
And I've run into that. I've gone to people's houses and they say, "Oh, my machine's not working really well." And I say, "Well, you know what? It's not your machine anymore. Someone else owns it."
So good luck with that, Dan. And we're going to move on to Harry in Rochester. Go ahead, Harry.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir.
I downloaded AVG 7.5 on my Dell 2350. I've got XP Home Edition, Mm-hmm. And the thing won't initialize. And so I click on the old icon, nothing happens. And I go to add remove, I want to remove it and download it again. And mm-hmm. It won't remove. So any suggestions?
What happens when you try?
Nothing.
You should get an error message of some sort.
Oh, well, there wasn't a message. I'm not seeing it anymore. It just said that there was an error in language. I can't remember the detail other than that.
And without the detail, we can't really help much. Generally, what you can do is Google the error message, and you'll find typically other people having the problem and often what a solution is.
Yeah, because I don't think they have a removal tool like Norton in there.
Manual removal, yeah. Where, you download the newest installer, and there's a repair option that should repair the installation.
Well, I downloaded it a couple more times, and there are three choices. One is, repair. So I click that dot. Still nothing gets better. And then there was another one, uninstall. You know, there are the three choices when you do the download.
Mm-hmm.
And still nothing happens. So
you might have to take it in to have it manually removed, because what it requires is when the uninstall and the add remove doesn't work. One other thing, though. Have you tried within AVG? If you go to start, you go to programs, you go to AVG, there's an uninstaller there. Have you tried using that one?
I don't recall that, other than as part of the installation, it was one of the three choices.
Yeah, well, usually if you go to the start, you go to programs, and you'll see the AVG listed there. If you click on that little box and opens up another window, you'll see the programs, and the bottom one is an uninstall program. Try using that to uninstall, but if it's not listed in the add remove programs under the control panel, then you might have an issue to where it's going to have to be taken in and manually removed by going into the registry, which I don't recommend the average person doing that. Sorry, that's about all we can say. By the tones, we got to go back to Brendan here. He's going to bring us the news and keep us on top of what's been happening overnight and everything else, and we'll get back to your questions right after the news.
The source.
All right, you're back. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
Yes, and while we're at it, let's introduce our guest here. It's Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software, and we want to welcome you aboard, sir. You've been
showing us some
really neat stuff, so let's talk about your company a little bit here, what you guys do, and what you might have coming out on the horizon.
One of the hidden gems here in Rochester.
Yes.
Well, we're a small software company. We primarily do consumer-level software. We do games, utilities, that kind of thing. We primarily do stuff for the Mac, but we also do some of our products on Windows as well. And, you know, we've been around,
for
a long time.
Yeah.
Very long time. Probably, I think, 14 years.
Whoa.
Like that. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. You know, like we were saying, small companies, you don't realize, you know, because you're doing most of your stuff over the internet as it is, right?
We are. We actually, we're moving into the retail space, which is, that's a whole nother can of worms. It's, I don't know if you know anything about it. We've done retail software before, but it's very similar to Mafia in terms of everyone that you have to pay off all along the way. It's real interesting.
And when you have to start dealing with disgruntled customers and wanting to return things 6 months after they bought it because it never worked, but took them 6 months to bring it back.
Sure, sure. you get some of that anyway, but some of the biggest thing is that you produce a piece of software, you have it packaged, and then you sell it to a distributor. And then the distributor sells it to a particular store or mail order catalog or whatever. You see those mail order catalogs and all the magazines, the companies that have those products are actually paying for the ad spots. So the mail order companies actually don't really end up paying anything for their ads. And it all kind of filters down the chain. It's a big racket. But
so let's go into some of the type of software that you actually do for the folks. If I'm a Mac or PC user, what am I going to find out there that, you know, might appeal to me?
Well, we have a number of games, all of which can be downloaded and tried out, but to see if you like them or not, at our website at www.ambrosiasw.com.
That's we'll have a link up there in a little bit.
Okay, cool. And we also do utility software in terms of we've got video capture software, audio capture software, a whole range of things, really.
Speaking on the audio, though, you were showing us this one new product that, as I understand, you're going to have out in the not-too-distant future before summer. I won't tie you down to a time because usually just when you do that is when something, you know, a beta tester or somebody comes out and says, oh, I found this, and that can throw your timeline back. But let's fill the folks in on this really cool product.
Well, the software business is funny because a lot of people say, well, when will it be done? And the only answer we have is, you know, whenever it's ready.
Yeah.
Because
well, and then half the joke there is it's never done, but we decided we got to ship it now.
Right.
And then version 2 is going to come.
And that's true with any software. It's really never done. It reaches a point where you think it's okay enough to unleash on the public, essentially, is really what it boils down to. And different companies have different standards in terms of what is ready for release. What some companies do is they'll set a date and they'll say, well, whatever we have on this date is what we ship. And that's pretty frightening.
Mm-hmm. But this one that you were showing us, whether you want to talk about that right now.
I can talk a little bit about it.
Well, we've talked about the
teasers.
Okay. Well, the current program is Wiretap.
Yep.
And the current version is really great for grabbing internet audio. Mm-hmm. So if you want to record sound bites off your internet stream or any of the other internet radio stations you get through your websites, you can't generally record that unless you like put a microphone up to the computer.
That's right.
So this Wiretap program will basically tap into the wire and let you record these live internet radio shows, which is really, really cool.
Yep, that's correct. And the new version that we're working on... we actually are patenting some of the stuff we're doing in there because it's pretty cool. It will let you do things like a live preview of the audio that you're recording, so you can switch between the compression settings and see what it sounds like before you ever record it. You know, in terms of the trade-off with disk space, a lot of people will rip CDs to MP3s, but mm-hmm. if you ask them, you know, what settings did you use, they have no idea.
They go, huh?
They have no idea. But this will actually let you hear what it's going to sound like and how big it's going to be before you ever record anything, which is it's pretty neat. And we also have a built-in sound editor in there and all sorts of fantastic stuff.
Really some cool stuff from what you were showing me. And I mean, I'm
expecting you guys to buy some copies, yes.
I think, well, definitely. I mean, you know, this is something for you folks because as we were talking before, you know, grabbing stuff from the internet, creating your own podcast and doing a lot of this stuff, even for an amateur like myself, you know, if I want to play around with something and, you know, you make it so easy. From just what I was seeing you do with some of the menus, they're very user-friendly. They're click and drag. And, you know, I mean, very simple. But, man, you can make it sound very professional.
Well, I think that's the real power in software is that if you do really good design, you can make hard things easy to do. And that's what we try to do in the software that we make, is make it really easy to do hard things and let the computer do the hard stuff and let the user just experiment with whatever they want to create, whether it's, you know, recording a new ringtone from their DVD player, recording sound bites on a stream so they can listen to it later or doing whatever they want. We want to make it incredibly easy for them to do that. There's no reason why the average person should be concerned with the nuts and bolts of how to do it any more than you really should be concerned with the nuts and bolts of how your car works when you just want to get from A to B.
You're more or less appealing to the end user that they click, they use it, and it just does it. They don't have to know the underlying, like you say, how the engine starts up and fires and pushes this cylinder and that valve.
But that's actually very difficult to do. It's very easy to make a program that is very powerful in that it has lots of options. It's very difficult to make a program that is easy to use, but also is very powerful and lets you produce fantastic results with it.
And that it is.
I've been playing a lot of their games. They've had some really great games over the years, and I like the new Sketch Fighter. You know, it's a paper cocktail napkin that you sketch out a spaceship on, and that's the whole game, and it's just really cool. It's one of those really retro cools.
And we've got some other games coming out. There's a game from a publisher in the UK called Introversion. And they have a game for Windows called DEFCON. So it's basically, if you remember the old War Games movie, it's sort of like that in that it's global thermonuclear war, and it's got a really stylized interface, and it's really very cool. It's playable online, and we're doing the Mac port of that. But the Windows version is out already. It's a pretty really cool game called DEFCON.
And should also mention, a coup a few years ago is they got one of their programs bundled on every new Mac. Yep. The Snaps Pro screen capture utility. So.
Yep, we've had that happen a few times, both with our utilities and our games, and it's interesting.
Cool. Well, folks, you definitely got to check it out. If you got any questions, Andrew is going to be here for the rest of the show. So, you know, you got any ideas or want to talk about it, give us a call. And we got to take a break right now, and we'll be back to the folks online. So if you're online, stay online. We'll get back to you as soon as we come back from this break. ABBA? I thought you were getting more upbeat stuff.
No, what's you know you had the bell bottoms and did the disco thing.
God. I'm Jay Benright.
I'm Steve Ray.
I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And I guess this is Soundbites. Man, you'll have the audience asleep. All right, tell you what, before they
you
do...
You mean to tell me you were not a fan of ABBA? Back in the day?
I can honestly say no.
Were you alive back
then? Unequivocally, I can
gonna
say
definitely not. I don't want to hurt your feelings and tell you that I was not alive back in those days, but anyway.
I've got socks that are older than you.
Listen, so. I got to put in a plug. This past week on Friday at my other job, we had a Macintosh computer completely, the hard drive just fried. I call up Steve. He was out there within hours and fixed this thing and
he
got
it. He just
back
wanted to
online.
Come out and check all the girls out at the high school.
Oh, gosh. I should probably hit
my
the
daughter
dump
went to
that
high school.
See?
Yeah, no, it's, you know, he really saved, you know, it's, he came out and fixed it. And so, you know, I definitely recommend Jesse Group. Seriously. They
saved
took really good
bacon.
Care of us. Yeah. And Dave, you've saved us many times too. So,
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Call when it starts to make that noise, not 6 months later.
Well, you know, that's the thing. The thing about ours is it didn't give us any warning.
Yeah.
No noise, no, just this
sometimes
didn't boot.
Sometimes they don't, folks. Yeah. I mean, it's like a light bulb.
Well, and that's the thing, too, is, and you know, I think I'm an example of why you should back things up and why you should have an external hard drive, because we just never did. You know, we never had one. And unfortunately, we lost about half. Steve was able to recover half of our, you know, half, if not three quarters of our stuff. But, you know, we could have been really... You know, hung out to dry.
Getting a cheap FireWire drive and just doing a quick copy every now and again.
Yep. Drives have gotten so cheap.
Well, what we're going to do is we're going to have Steve come out and put a external drive in and set us up so it automatically backs up in the middle of the night.
Yeah,
we talked about that, Steve. Right?
Yep.
Yeah. So, no, you guys have you saved our tail, Steve. Thank you very much. Because of you, the radio station is still on the air.
Yeah,
that's right.
It was our percentage this week is pretty low. We had one success and two failures of recovering hard drive.
Yeah,
but overall, we're running about 90% success.
Yeah. Same here. You know what I mean? Even that one that I had just a week ago that was in, literally caught on fire.
Whoa.
Yep.
I got to show you. I'm going to put the pictures up on the web. Yeah, it was a laptop that was on recall, and they didn't change out the battery, and it literally caught on fire. So
that's insane. You know?
Yeah.
And there's always drive savers.
Oh yeah,
$1,000 minimum.
When you brought that up, I laughed. I'm like, you know, because I've heard you guys talk about it a million times on the show, and it's just like, yeah, no.
They had some good success.
Well, they're out in California. They do a lot of work in Hollywood recovering TV shows and movies. And you'd think if anyone would have a backup, it'd be those guys because the budgets are there. You know, $200 for a terabyte hard drive. No,
well that's the thing. If it's worth a minimum of $1,000 to recover it, why wasn't it worth a couple $100 to just, you know, back it up.
Well, you know, the funny thing about it is you know, you guys we're constantly harping on, you know, a lot of times, you know, Macs are better than PCs and things like that. So I'd gotten brainwashed to the point where I'm just like, oh, the thing will never quit. It'll last forever.
A lot of the components in there are the same. I mean, hard drives fail, doesn't matter what machine.
When it comes to hardware, Macs and PCs are no different.
Yeah.
They're pretty similar.
It's like that light bulb. You flick, you know, you come into a room, flip on that switch. You don't know the day that light bulb is all of a sudden go pop or they get real bright and go out.
Yeah.
They don't always give you a lot of warning. So, you know, you're gambling sometimes. And like Andrew said, not to spend, you know, less than $200. You can have like a, you know, a 250 gig hard drive in an enclosure.
Yeah, they're less than a buck a gig. I remember paying $1,000 a meg.
Yeah.
Don't date yourself.
The prices are so cheap. Matter of fact, I had another company where I set them up with two external USB drives. One, it does, it goes Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. The other is Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. So in case either one of those hard drives fail.
Yeah,
you know, they got another one. The worst case scenario, they're only going to be one day behind.
Right. And you could set these things up to automatically back up in the middle of the night if you want to.
That's what I do. Yes. When everybody goes, it's set to this particular company at 8 o'clock at night, and it just does it.
We work with a medical records company, and they have mirrored hard drives on all their servers. So if one hard drive fails, it automatically kicks to the other one.
Right.
But then they also do hourly backup. Every hour, they have a different hard drive they back up things on.
Yeah.
It's like I was just reading this story on one of the magazines. A tech in Juneau, Alaska, accidentally deleted a hard drive.
Oh, God.
And deleted $38 billion out of the Alaskan budget.
Whoa.
Fortunately, it was the Alaska Department of Revenue. Fortunately, they were able to recover it and got most of the data back. But so then everyone's joking about, well, he's a tech guy. Doesn't they have a backup anyway?
You would think.
But yeah, everyone's probably done that. You hit that one keystroke wrong, and oh, crap.
All right, tell you what, we got to take another break, folks. You folks, if you're on the line, stay on the line. As soon as we come back from this break, we'll try to buzz through you folks. And stay tuned, because coming up, I'm also going to tell you about my story for this week of a unique program that you're going to want to know about. So stay tuned.
William Broad.
About time.
Otherwise
you
known
woke
as Billy
up.
Idol.
Yep.
What, did you get a shock back there or something, you know? Yes, folks, you're back to Soundbites, and I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And yeah, we'll tell you what, with that lively music, we'll get right back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Brad and Victor. Brad, how can we help you today, sir?
Well, I've got a bit of a problem. I started getting a low disk space warning on my computer. I've got an 80 gig hard drive in there.
Mm-hmm.
Computer's about a year old, working on XP Home.
Mm-hmm.
I ran the disk cleanup utility. That didn't do much. I've got about 147 meg free space out of this 80 gig hard drive.
Yep, you have to decide what files you want to delete, or you can get a bigger hard drive.
What I have discovered is that there is a file in there under all users, documents and settings, all users, application data, AOL user profiles, all users, and then it says and spyware. And in the DAT file, a 65 gig file.
Hmm. Isn't that special?
That sounds like a corrupt file.
Yeah, you probably want to just try deleting that one.
Well, I wouldn't delete it yet. Maybe move it to the recycle bin, but don't empty the recycle bin. Because AOL may need that as part of the AOL anti-spyware program.
Yeah, but it shouldn't need no 65 gigs.
Well, it shouldn't need to be that big. You may need to reinstall the AOL anti-spyware.
Yeah, but if he deletes it, like you say, and leaves it in the trash, it'll recreate it if it does need it.
If that's in user profiles. You know, I would think it would be something that can be recreated by AOL.
Yeah, the minute you delete it,
it may be a cache of some kind, a cache gone wild.
It's cached every spy program that it's deleted.
Do you
deleted.
Have kids?
I have one who has his own computer.
I can't blame him, then.
Wait a minute. Well, you said had. Did he use your computer for a while?
Do I use it?
No, did he use it?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Not that I know of.
That could also be your saved mail in the AOL folder. I'm doing some Google searches here, and 65 megs in the AOL folder isn't unusual if you save a lot of mail locally.
He's saying 65 gig.
This is 65 gig.
Oh, yeah, 65 gig. Yeah, sorry.
That's a heck of a lot of mail.
65 gig, there is definitely something wrong.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So I delete that file. Don't empty the trash. Just delete the file. Or here's another trick. Rename that file. If whatever the extension is, say it's DAT, rename it to DA underscore.
Or BAK, backup.
Yeah, BAK.
Okay.
Rename it. See if everything still works. And if it still works, you know, you go back into it, recreates the file, and then, you know, try it out for a little bit, and then see if it's safe to delete that file.
Okay, so rename it, move it to the recycle bin.
Just rename it. Just by renaming it, to BAK, you know, whatever the file name is, .BAK. You're just changing the file extension.
Okay.
To a BAK, which stands for backup. And if everything still works, you're golden.
The other
then you can fully erase the file.
Okay, it says cannot rename that, access is denied.
You don't have AOL running. Well, the AOL anti-spyware probably is running in the background.
Most likely.
You may have to do it in safe mode.
Okay.
Restart in safe mode.
Alrighty.
Try it and let us know.
The other thing that you might want to do is if we can get you to stop using AOL, you can just delete the whole thing entirely.
Yeah, really. We got time, Rob? Do one more? All right, let's go to Bob in Greece. Go ahead, Bob.
Hello, good morning.
Good morning.
A little bit left of the morning.
Yeah, a couple minutes.
First of all, Steve's a biker. I spent $1 a byte for my first memory.
Yep.
1962.
Yeah.
At any rate, I have been using Thunderbird and Firefox for...
Tell you what, Bob, I'm sorry. The break is coming up on us. I apologize that... Stay on the line, and the minute we come right out of the news, we'll get right to you, I promise. So,
But we have a minute now of music.
Yeah, but it's not fair to him. He wanted to get in there. He's got an issue with Thunderbird, and I don't want to cut him short because he has been very patient and staying online as long as he has while we were talking about some other stuff. So, we'll get back to them.
Well, and then just quickly, while we have a few seconds left, the Alaska story I was talking about, they lost $38 billion in paperwork on their hard drive.
Yeah.
The backup was 300 cardboard boxes, cost them $200,000 to hire people to type all that stuff back in again.
Yeah.
So that was the recovery of $38 billion.
Your tax dollars at work.
And, for like we were saying, for a couple hundred bucks, you can get it and be covered. We'll be back.
Thousand-watt News Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show at 222-1180, *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers, or the One Communications line at 1-800-295-1180. Now alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on 50,000-watt 1180 WHAM.
Well, he's right about part of it. You are back to Soundbites, and I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And Nick is off recuperating and just taking it easy. And we're going to go right back to the phones as we promised, and we're going to go back to Bob in Greece, who has an issue with Thunderbird. Go ahead, Bob.
Okay, yeah. I've been using Thunderbird and Firefox for several years, and a few weeks ago at my place of work, we installed, because of some relaying problems, a Cisco hardware something or other, along with a VPN. And since then, by the way, the company also, we have our own domain for mail. Since then, I have not been able to receive mail through Thunderbird on the first try. When I fire up Thunderbird, it connects, and it says connected to sabinmetal.com, and then it sits there and trundles until it times out. If you wait a few seconds after it times out, and that takes about a minute, and you ask it again to go, it can, most of the time, get the mail.
Yeah.
Now, all this time, whether or not I have the VPN actuated or not, and all this time Outlook Express works. So I've had to go back to Outlook Express, which I don't like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Was there a change in any of the mail server settings to require authenticated sending or send before receive?
No, there wasn't. Oh, and one other thing. One other guy that uses Thunderbird at home finds it's okay on a dial-up circuit, but I have the Frontier DSL. Oh, by the way, this is both on my desktop and on my laptop.
Wonder if it's just taking time to establish the VPN connection.
No, I'm saying this Thunderbird happens whether or not VPN is actuated or not.
So it's not there, but it works fine with Outlook Express.
Well, it sounds like the VPN was set up to allow you to send and receive mail from home. Is that correct?
No, I've been doing that for years.
Interesting.
No, we set the VPN up and whatever else Cisco put in, because somebody was using our domain as
so,
a relay.
Yeah, so they set up a mail relay. So you probably need to go into your Thunderbird settings and do authenticated, what is it, ASMTP?
Yes.
Or there may be, I forget what the syntax is, send before receive, so that your computer authenticates itself to the server. So the server says, okay, you can do this now.
It's always done that.
But
had to use a password from the outside. And of course,
the password is for receiving mail. A lot of mail servers now, you need a password to send mail.
Yeah,
I don't want to send mail. I send mail fine.
Right, but you have to send mail before it lets you receive mail. Some of the mail servers can be set up that way to help with the authentication and relaying and spam control. So there may be a setting. I'm trying to launch. I don't have Thunderbird installed here.
I think the reason that you were able to send and receive email prior to this is because of that open relay mail server that you had. And it sounds like what was done was it was...
With the Cisco router?
What was properly done was your mail server was locked down such that other people can't hijack it and use it to spam people.
How come it'll work if I ask it to get the mail after it times out once?
Because the mail server now knows that's you. So that could be the issue inside Thunder. I'm trying to see if it's in the Thunderbird help anywhere.
But the way the VPNs work is it makes it seem like you're on the same network as the mail server, which should allow you to send and receive mail. And the thing what we're wondering is whether it takes a little bit of time before that connection is properly established and authenticated.
And he said that it also happens without the VPN running, which makes me say it's something in the Cisco stuff that changed their mail server to close the open relay.
Yeah, he just might
want to talk. He also said he's got DSL at home. Frontier requires you to use the Frontier mail server to send mail. They block port 25, so you cannot send mail unless you send it through Frontier. Which is a little tricky, so you can't run your own mail server at home. So, but if he's VPNing in, then he should be able to use his own mail server.
Right.
But not VPNing,
he's got
to
check
Frontier.
With them a little bit, too, what they've changed there as far as the Cisco router and everything else. You got to do a little more homework because, you know, if one's doing it and the other's not, some setting in Thunderbird has to be changed. And like you said, going with the AM.
They may have also gone to secure mail sending and receiving, and that's also in the Thunderbird setup under tools account settings.
Yeah, that's about the best we can do, Bob. I mean, you know, again, you're going into company. We don't want to go too far. You know, they might have certain constraints and that type of stuff.
Contact your IT department.
Yeah, they can probably be a little more helpful.
Likely they've made special rules for Outlook Express because they know people can't configure Outlook Express, it's a dominant program, so that's why it's working and Thunderbird's not.
I'll tell you what, let's go back to the phones and we'll go to Pauline in Fairport. Hello, Pauline.
Good afternoon, Dave. I'm purchasing a laptop. It's an HP Pavilion 6226. And our PCs that we have in the house right now have been working very nicely using a firewall zone alarm for the firewall and AVG for the antivirus, etc. Well, with the new laptops, Vista is the operating system, and what I'd like to know from you is what advice you have in terms of firewall and antivirus protection.
You can still use the AVG, and you can still use Zone Alarm.
So that's different than what I was told I purchased it.
Well, Vista has anti-spyware and firewall built in.
Yes.
We don't really find it that secure.
Right.
So you turn that off and use the AVG and the Zone Alarm.
I believe Zone Alarm now has a version that will, I be honest with you, like you.
That's the other problem. You have to make sure the programs you download are Vista compatible.
I know AVG will work because on my test box at the shop, I've got Vista on the machine. Built the machine with Vista on it and playing around with that. Now, here's the thing. Now, is this the old, you said you got multiple computers in the house?
Well, right now we have a couple PCs. My son, my husband, have PCs.
All right,
yeah,
now,
you may want to get a hardware router.
Do you have a router?
We do, yeah.
Okay. Linksys?
Linksys, yeah.
Right.
Then I wouldn't worry too much about running another firewall, because if you've got the Linksys, you've got a hardware firewall right there.
That's right.
One thing a program like Zone Alarm can do is Zone Alarm checks for outgoing problems. where the hardware firewall stops incoming problems. Mm-hmm. So if you get an email or a Trojan through LimeWire or something like that, Zone Alarm can catch that coming out of your computer, too.
Okay.
But so, then you have to know a little more about the Zone Alarm messages.
Okay.
So bottom line is, if you know, you put AVG on this new machine, and you don't have to worry too much about the firewall because you've got a hardware firewall, and hardware is always better than software anyways because it's an actual piece of equipment that's doing instead of just software. So you've got the protection there. If you know, if it's a wireless network, you can always lock it on down by putting in the WEP and set it up with a key code to protect that. There's other things there you could do. But all in all, I think you should be pretty well satisfied with it.
Well, and I was going to say that one of the problems, and this is what we're seeing in a lot of the entry-level PCs, is that this specific HP model, like most of the entry-level PCs, uses shared video memory. So you're not going to get any much of the advantages of Vista because you're not going to be able to run the graphical interface with shared video memory.
Right. Okay,
but that's your only option these days.
Yeah. One thing I'm going to do, normally we do it earlier, but usually I have a story of the week, and we'll just sort of jump into it right now without all that crazy music that Rob dreams up there.
Look at him jump for the microphone.
No.
Should have just done it, not warn him.
Yeah. This is not the Cleavers. That's all I can think of is June Cleaver. There you go. That's my ringtone now. When you call the phone, I change it. Just a moment of this. Thank you. All right. As I promised the earlier caller, one of the new things that I think, and I'm going to be talking to Nick about this, you know, we dropped Stinger as far as one of the things needed for the security Tangle. One of the other products that I've been looking at and using quite a bit, I know we sit there and say, you know, use AVG for your antivirus, use the Adware and the SpyBot. Well, you know, those do a good job. But like anything else, folks, in this computer world, they're always trying to leapfrog around this or leapfrog around this one. You know, it's a constant battle to keep updating. Well, one of the other programs that I'm starting to recommend, and matter of fact, I'm putting on the new the Soundbites CD that I put out to folks that can't download it all the time, is a product now, along with AVG Antivirus, is AVG Spyware.
Anti-spyware.
Well, it's a spyware program that you run, and it catches even some of the stuff that Adware, I got to admit, and SpyBot that aren't. Because, like I say, they're always finding workarounds.
Well, and that's, yeah, the two big anti-spyware programs are Adware and SpyBot, and so the spyware companies are figuring out ways around that.
Right. It's essentially an arms race. And,
yeah.
You know, they're constantly looking for ways around it, and the suppliers of anti-spyware are constantly trying to keep updated to keep them up to date.
And yeah, we had an article about that a few weeks ago about Symantec. Antivirus, which is one of the biggest antivirus programs, is that 80% of viruses get past it.
Yeah.
Because they know Symantec antivirus and they write their virus to bypass it.
And I feel compelled to mention that if you're sick of the arms race, you might consider getting a Mac for your next computer and spend less time and money worrying about this stuff.
Yeah, no, it's always, you know, a religious issue here. But, you know, as we've said before, folks, you know, we try to keep you up on, you know, the latest and greatest things to do without trying to do too much. I mean, the folks that, and I've had folks come in, have, you know, three antivirus programs running, thinking one's good, two more should even be better, and, you know, a boatload of spyware programs. You get too much running, you can't do anything on your machine.
They'll interfere with each other.
Yeah. Right.
And that's one of the big problems with spyware is there's so many little spy programs running on your computer, it just bogs down.
Yeah.
Well, you cause that yourself if you put too many anti-spyware programs on it.
So right now, I'm going out on a limb and saying, you know, run the Adware SpyBot and this new one, which is by AVG, and it's anti-spyware software. Again, it's a freebie, and it does a great job. So check that out, and tell you what, we got some time here still. Let's go to Brian in Honeoye Falls. Go ahead, Brian. I don't know if we're going to be able to much help with you because Nick is the Linux guru, and He's not here, but go ahead.
Yeah, I just had a fairly simple question, but it's escaping me. If I boot, if I go into, like, I have a work laptop that's got XP and you got to, and it's set to log into a network. If I want to run the live CD on there, because I don't want to install Linux on that computer, and but I want to access files on my hard drive, I can't seem to see my hard drive or, you know, like with a, if I put a thumb drive in a computer where I've got Linux installed, it shows it and I can mount it and unmount it, but I can't even see the hard drive to mount or access file.
Do you know what format your Windows hard drive is in? Is it NTFS or FAT32?
I believe it's NTFS.
That's why you can't see it in Linux.
Yeah.
It has to be FAT32.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
So what you could do, now here's just a thought, you could always put in a second hard drive.
Yep.
And format it, when you go to set it up, and format it as FAT32. Move some of your files over there, copy them over, because it's a second hard drive.
I thought Linux would do either. I guess not.
Nope.
No, no.
Well, there is a way, and I'm trying to find it now. There is a way, here it is, at SourceForge, for Linux to read NTFS volumes, and it's linux-ntfs.org. So you can install this package into Linux, and then it will be able to see the NTFS volume.
So the short answer is, you know...
it can be done. You just have to do something a little
different.
Yeah,
you got to do a little more. And we got to take a quick break. Folks on the line, stay on the line, and we'll get back to you as soon as we get done with this break.
Call Wham now at 2 Wham, Sean Hannett.
'60s, '70s.
You were talking away, and I didn't turn your mic on. Yeah, I want to listen to the music.
You just love this old
stuff.
There's
no one here named Eileen.
Oh, don't give me that look. You like this song.
Another one-hit wonder from Dexy's Midnight Runner.
No, this was during the 60s and 70s, and if you can remember the 60s or 70s, you weren't there. I'm Dave Enright on Soundbites.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
And tell you what, with that, we'll go right back to the callers, and we'll go to Ray and Webster. Go ahead, Ray.
Hi, guys.
Hello.
I just bought Adobe CS2 to install on my eMac.
Uh-oh.
And I came to the realization that it requires a DVD, and I only have a CD-ROM. I can buy an external DVD.
Mm-hmm.
And do the install, but someone told me that there was a way to use my wife's PC, which has a DVD in it, and somehow I can
network it.
Network it. Yeah, the PC partition, not the Mac partition. It won't be able to read the Mac partition potentially.
Okay.
But
so
yeah, if your computers are networked, you'd put the disk in the PC. If the PC can read it, that's going to be the question, whether it's an ISO disk or a Mac disk.
Now, here's, because I don't know Macs that well, can he create a folder on the Mac, network it over, and copy the content of the DVD to his Mac, and then install
it from
there?
Well, one of the problems is that CS2 is what, 5 CDs? Or 5 DVDs,
yeah.
So it's many discs, but it
saves going out and buying a
drive.
Well, I'm 3 or 4 months away from getting a MacBook.
I think you'll be happy once you do, because eMac is going to be straining a little bit to run something like...
is a G4 processor, but...
True.
And the new version of CS3 is getting announced at the end of the month.
The one issue about DVDs is they are multi-session. So, like they were discussing, it's possible that there may be a different volume that gets mounted when you mount that DVD on your PC. So the actual files that you want to copy over, you may not see them when you put it in the PC.
Or the PC just may spit the disk out as an unreadable disk because it's in Mac-only format.
It's a DVD. It should be able to mount something.
Yeah.
But the question is whether you're actually going to be able to copy anything useful off of it doing it that way.
Another interesting thought is Adobe might be making a hybrid disk with the Mac installer and the Windows installer on
That's right. Just
giving you one serial number.
That's right.
So you put it into the PC, it sees the PC installer, not the Mac installer.
Yep, and that is the way a lot of vendors are doing their DVDs these days, multi-session.
Yeah, so you could get an external DVD reader for the Mac. You could replace the internal CD writer with the DVD reader, but that's pretty, you know, tricky to pull the EMAC far enough apart. Since it's one of the all-in-one computers, so you got to take it all the way apart to get to the drive.
Now, I would never advocate doing this, but I've heard of people that they will go to a store, they'll buy an external DVD drive, they'll you know, put the install the software they need, and they'll return the DVD drive because they say they don't like it.
Well, then oftentimes you pay the restocking fee.
Yeah.
Because it's
which
an open box.
Which is cheaper than owning a whole DVD right. player.
But. Or find a friend with a DVD-enabled computer
borrow.
That you can read the discs onto your computer with. Mm-hmm. Either through the network or what Apple's got, a FireWire target mode. So you can turn one of the computers into a hard drive and then load the DVDs through the hard drive from the other computer.
So there's a couple options for you. Good luck, Rick. Let us know how you make out. Let's go to Bruce in Macedon. Go ahead, Bruce.
Hello. How you doing?
Good, sir. Yourself?
Good. I got a question for you. I had Norton personal firewall and antivirus onto my computer,
mm-hmm.
and I just renewed the personal firewall a couple weeks ago. And ever since I did that, I keep getting this dialog box that keeps popping up, and it says, like, Kodak EasyShare software is trying to access the Internet
yeah.
and everything else, and it just keeps popping up. And I keep closing it down. I looked at the different categories it had on there, and it had, like, always recommended, you know, checked off. And so I said, well, that's what you got to do. But it continually pops up, and I was wondering can you get it so it doesn't pop
There's
up.
There's another checkbox in there to remember this setting for next time.
And one of the other things you might want to do, too, though, is go into Norton.
Okay.
To view the programs that it's blocking or allowing.
Okay.
There might have been another time that you told EasyShare not to.
All right.
And what's probably happening, and we're seeing more and more programs do this, is that they assume you're on broadband. And when you boot your computer, or even when you launch a program, it checks on the Internet for an update.
Okay.
So you're going to have to tell your firewall to allow all of these other programs to get to the Internet so they can check for updates.
All right. Yeah, and every all the time, all the boxes that pop up say it's a low risk and all the other kind of stuff.
Yeah, usually yeah, you check, say allow and remember.
Right, allow and remember. And the problem is, if you don't recognize the name of the program it's telling you, you can inadvertently block something good. One of the early problems we ran into is that Outlook Express, the actual program file name, is MSIMN, Microsoft Internet Mail and News.
Okay.
.exe. So people were getting these firewall notices that MSIMN wants to get to the Internet. I don't know what that is. Block it. And then their email stops working.
Yeah. Shut them right down.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I greatly appreciate it. You guys have a great show.
Thank you. All right. Our next caller is Tom in Greece. Go ahead, Tom.
Good morning. I got a question. I got a machine running XP Pro, and I got two hard drives, 250 gig, and I was mainly using my second hard drive as backup and storing of my videos, and basically I had redundant videos on my C drive and copies on the D drive, and then had a backup program on there. Well, I got to the point to where I fill those things up, so I bought an external 500 gig hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, what I noticed is when I had, because I had a lot of video files in there, a lot of them were pretty big. And when I tried to, when I put them into my new hard drive, and I wanted to delete the other copy, the recycle bin is limited on how big of a file it'll delete.
Right.
And that guy who said he had, what, 65?
65 gig file, yeah,
gig,
good point.
That'll never, it'll...
thank you. You'll probably get some message about the file is too big, you want
right,
to delete it immediately.
Right, and it'll just have to delete it right away.
Right, so just rename it as
a That's why
test.
We told him to rename it.
Yeah. Well, anyways, so my question is, so now I've got the 500 hard drive, and I've backed up, I've got all, I've got my videos on my my D drive, and then I got my copy of them on my 500 gig external. Now, I want a backup, and I was using the X-Pro backup wizard,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to do a full backup, and if I do that, then I'm going to start to fill that thing up, and then what I wanted to do, but I heard or I read or something that on the full backup, when you want to restore, it does an automatic format of the drive you want to restore, and essentially it reloads the whole file back in. And
well, that depends on what backup and restore program you're using.
Well, I was using the what came with the Windows XP Pro.
Never use that. Yeah. The backup works okay. The restore sucks and will not work.
Ah, well, see, my question would have been, if I wanted to just grab, if I lost a file and I wanted to go back in and grab a file, I could never do it with the full backup.
That depends entirely on the backup program you're okay. using.
Yeah, see, I use the Kodak backups, or, I mean the Windows backup program, but all I use it for is backing up files. I never, because anytime something crashes, that's the system's way of saying, well, you needed to reload everything fresh anyways, which is what you'd want to do. But the key thing is backing up any documentation, settings, and all that type of stuff. So this is where I tell folks, just as a side tool, within Windows XP, they've got a program called the File and Transfer Wizard.
Yeah.
What you can do is run that program, and you tell it, this is the old computer. You create a folder called, say, data, or whatever you want to call it, and you have it back up all the stuff to that particular folder. And what it does is it saves all your documents, all your file settings, all your desktop settings, and everything else. And it crunches it down into a nice little folder. And what you do then is then copy that file to your external drive. So now, if something happens to crash, say your whole machine just totally goes bonkers on you. Granted, you'd have to reload Windows and reinstall the programs. But now if you wanted all your emails, all your documents, your desktop icons and all that, you could go and say, run the wizard again and say, this is the new computer. You point it to that folder off on that external hard drive and say, here's the information. You pull it in and it would pull in all your documents, all your settings and everything else, and you'd be just about back to where you were before.
And if you are looking for a different backup program,
there's a lot of them.
We talked about them in the past. Backup My PC, Simple Backup, even Retrospect is a commercial program, and virtually all of them have a what they call an either a file restore, so you can restore a single file, or an incremental restore, so it just restores the files that aren't on the hard drive now. So formatting during restore is an option on some backup programs, usually intended for disaster recovery. But almost all the backup programs will also have a file restore option.
So there's a couple things to try, and give them a shot. Let us know how you make out. We'll go next to Dan and Byron. How you doing, Dan?
Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon, sir.
Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I have a Dell 4700. I'm running XP Home. I've got Office 2003. And I'm pretty religious about running the Tango. I have three users set up on this PC.
Mm-hmm.
And on my administrator user, I have no problems running the PC. But on one of the desktops, which is a limited desktop, when we try to log off, the system hangs, and it goes to a black screen, and nothing happens. You wait till doomsday, and it won't shut down. And
is this for one of your kids?
It's my wife's.
Okay.
Are you sure the other accounts are well, this is logging out or shutting down?
Either one. Logging off to switch user or logging off entirely just goes to a completely black screen, and the only way I've been able to reset it is to basically turn the PC off and restart.
But the other users log on and log off, no problem.
Yep. Now, the only other thing that I've seen is there's an error when I load Outlook. I run, like I said, Office 2003. Mm-hmm. And when I load startup Outlook on that desktop, I get an AVG XCH32.dll couldn't be loaded. And it seems to be somehow tied in with that. It says to do the detect and repair, which I've done several times, and it doesn't seem to fix the problem.
The easiest way to work around this, Dan, might be...
I'll make a new limited user for that person and delete the old user.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. You know, the identity has gotten corrupt. and, you know, sitting there trying to walk you through on how to move everything over and that, and the time that you've spent, it might be just easier to create another user, you know, set up her desktop and everything else, and, you know, put it into the, delete the old user. Because, you know, you could spend hours and you're going to be spinning your wheels, trying to hunt this down, and it's just easier to recreate it.
Yeah, we get that question a lot, you know, machines that have been repaired. Well, what went wrong? Well, we could spend the next 3 weeks of billable time figuring out what went wrong, or we can just fix it.
Yeah, because what you can do is all her icons on their desktop, you can just, select all of them, cut them, and paste them into a folder on the hard drive. Then have her log on. You go back into the temporary folder on the C drive, grab those icons and paste them back out onto the desktop under the new user, thus eliminating, you know, having to reload, you know, or put all the icons back on her desktop. And that might help you. I mean, give it a shot. You know,
it's the basic problem is there's something running in her username that won't let go when you're logging out. And finding what that is going to be a lot of detective work and time consuming.
All right, let's go to Ginny in Pittsford. How you doing, Ginny?
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call. You're doing a nice job, Dave.
Thank you.
My question is about a file system. I have a desktop and a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
My desktop has a 120 gig hard drive, and I see that when I go into the C drive, and it's an NTSF file.
Mm-hmm.
My laptop tells me I only have a 53.1 gigabyte hard drive, but it's a FAT32.
Yeah, you've got to convert it.
I'd like to know the difference between them and how I can change the laptop.
You don't have to convert it. NTFS is better in many respects, but there's some older programs that don't work well with NTFS.
What are you running on the laptop? Is it Windows XP?
XP Pro.
There is a convert to NTFS option. What is it? Tools, system tools, accessories, something like that.
Yeah.
The other thing you're running into is a marketing problem. Your computer was probably marketed with a 60 gigabyte hard drive, which is 60 billion bytes. And by the time you divide by 1024, divide by 1024, divide by 1024, you're at 53 gigabytes. So it's not that you're missing any space. It's just marketing people.
Yeah.
And there is a certain amount of overhead that the system uses on those drives as well.
So you might want to look into converting it to NTFS FAT. You'll wind up with fewer temp files and sluggishness, and things do run a little bit easier. Since you are running XP Pro, I would say wouldn't hurt to try it out. Listen, we got to take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll get to the rest of the callers on the line. So if you're on the line, stay on there, and we'll get right back to you. Need help.
What's his real name?
I don't know. How about that guitar issue at the Super Bowl? You hear about that?
No.
You didn't hear about that.
Is there wardrobe malfunction?
What it looked like behind the screen, that was the big controversy.
Oh, yeah. He's playing the guitar behind a white screen, and his guitar is kind of phallic-shaped.
You can read it. Okay.
It really did look that way, but my gosh, the conspiracy theorists that are out there after the whole wardrobe malfunction a couple of years ago.
Well, Prince is actually a Jehovah's Witness now.
Really?
Yeah. So
is it Prince again, or is that that funky symbol?
I think he's Prince again,
he's
a Jehovah's Witness, and he actually goes door to door. I mean, he pulls up in a limo with bodyguards.
I was going to say,
but he does his Jehovah's Witness thing, and he goes door to door in the Minneapolis.
His guitar is shaped like the symbol thingy. That's where he got his name. Well, his actual real name is Prince Edward Nelson.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Can you imagine opening up your door, you know what I mean, and there's Prince?
Yep. Hi, I'm Prince. I want to talk to you. No.
And I just have one other little tidbit here. It looks like the Come On Eileen, the Dexys Midnight Runner song, is actually from the 80s. 1980,
I could have told you that. But, yeah, that makes sense. That's a good tune.
It is.
It is. I'm sorry.
Oh, well.
Right. Yeah, but what does he want Eileen to be doing?
Tell you what, let's go back to the phones. We got John in Rochester. John, how can we help you?
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good. You running?
Yeah, I'm just walking outside.
Oh.
I have a major problem, and no one's been able to fix it. I hope you guys can.
They threw you out of the house?
No, I'm actually in a store. I was waiting.
Okay.
Anyway, I have a Belkin wireless router in the house, and I network, like, I guess, like four or five PCs off of it.
Mm-hmm.
I have a work-issued laptop. It's a Dell Latitude that I purchased a Belkin wireless card for it.
Mm-hmm.
About once a month, all of a sudden, my laptop cannot locate my network. I know it's not the card because they send me a new card, but even my old card can actually tie into the neighbor's network, you know, very faintly because of the distance.
Mm-hmm.
I'll call up Belkin. I'll go through three or four texts from all over the world. One will manage to fix it. Then a month later, it goes out again. And I have the same situation, and it can't locate my network.
How old is your wireless network router?
About two and a half years old.
Is
all the other, I have four or five PCs all working fine off of it.
Are they wired or wireless?
Wireless.
So all the wireless computers, this is the only one that it happens with.
Yeah, both laptops and PCs have no problem locating my home network.
I would check the firmware revision in your wireless router to see if that needs updated. Because, say, a 2 or 3 year old G router and then a brand new G card, it might be slightly different.
Yeah,
Gs.
Have an issue.
Possible.
Because, okay, see, so you've got your old machines, like you said, and you bought those a couple of years ago. They've got a certain version of the firmware on them. And you get this new laptop, and you went out and bought a brand new wireless card, Belkin.
Did you get a G card or an N card?
I believe it's a G card.
Okay.
The firmware might need updating on the router. And you can go to Belkin. And matter of fact, I think it's in the Belkin software. You can even within there, the administrator
check. The administrator in the router configuration
And it'll
page.
Check for updates for the firmware.
So I guess control panel and look for the
you've got to log into the Belkin router. And it's usually you open up a browser and you type in an address, 198.162.10.whatever. It'll tell you in your manual what the address is. You go into there, put in the administrator password, username and password, and you're into the actual router itself. And within there, there's usually a spot that you can check for firmware updates.
Now, why would it just go out maybe like once a month? It's working fine, and then suddenly it stops working.
Sometimes things break.
Yeah. I mean,
well, and
renewing,
some of
I mean, it could be a renewing issue that it's going to renew the date depending on how long it keeps that IP address.
Yeah.
You know,
and routers we often forget about when we're restarting our computer. So if your router's been sitting there running for months and months and months, it sometimes gets tired and needs reset too.
Yeah, refreshing. So I mean, it could be a combination of issues without actually seeing it. It's kind of hard. Tell you what, we got to take a quick break. And so you folks that are on the line, stay on the line, and we'll try to get back to you as soon as we come back from this break. Save a horse, ride a cowboy.
Very good. You got it.
Love this song. You're back to Soundbites. I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Rob Linton.
I'm Andrew Welch.
You got to find Toby Keith and Willie Nelson doing beer for, what is it, whiskey for my men and beer for my horses.
Tell you what, let's see if we can buzz through the rest of these calls. Let's go to Lance in Rochester. How can we help you, Lance?
Well, you commented a month ago that the latest AVG does not work with the Windows 98.
No.
And I found that to be true. I installed it on both 98 and XP, and the 98 kept it going into a loop. And I uninstalled it from 98, and now it works.
Right.
I think we said that AVG was the only one that did work with 98 anymore.
What's that?
I think we said that AVG was the only one that did work with 98.
Well, I have an older one. It might work with 98.
Another program that will work with Windows 98, because some of the newer versions of AVG 7.5, I'm not sure that will. There's another antivirus program that is free that will work with Windows 98, and it's called Antivir, A-N-T-I-V-I-R. And if you do a Google search, you'll find
it there.
We
have a link on our
website.
And
we've got a link off of our website, and I guarantee you that will work with Windows 98.
And for our previous caller converting FAT to NTFS, I put a link from Microsoft's website on how to do that.
All right. So give that a shot. And next we'll go to Roger in Churchville. Roger, how can we help you?
Hi, how you doing?
Good, sir.
I'm trying to do video capture. In other words, I have Adobe Premiere 2.0 that I've been doing movie capture, and I have a Dell 4600, and that seems to work fine. Well, I bought a new computer, an HP AMD dual-core 4600, that has Vista on it,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Dell had XP, and somehow the video doesn't work. In other words, the Adobe Premiere program will actually turn the camera on, but no video comes through.
You probably need an update for Vista, and they may not have one yet for Premiere.
Well, what I did is I did buy the Adobe 3.0, mm-hmm. the Element 3,
yep.
which is supposed to be Vista compatible,
yep.
and that does not provide the video.
Like
what video card are you using?
Well, that's the question. I don't know. In other words,
is it on board?
I bought an HP computer, AMD dual core 4600.
Well, you said you're capturing video from what source, and how is that video getting into the computer?
It's from a digital camera through FireWire.
Premiere over FireWire should work.
Yeah,
should work.
94.
But
no guarantees. I mean, it's Vista, and we're finding a number of software issues, newer software that they're still trying to get the kinks out of it because the software, they just haven't been able to do it very well because of the various video cards that are coming out. Now, how much memory does this machine have?
2 gigs.
Right.
If you're capturing video from a video camera, right?
That's right.
The video card that you're using probably shouldn't make much of a difference. The issue might be, you might need to talk to Adobe to make sure that the product works properly with Vista
and that particular video card.
Well, not video capture device. He's coming in through FireWire.
Right.
So there may be a FireWire update needed from HP, and there may be a Vista update needed from Adobe.
Right.
Of course, we could always say get a Mac with the built-in iMovie. It just works.
Yeah,
but we won't.
But we won't.
All right, let's take a caller, Matt from Canandaigua. Matt, how can we help you, sir?
I enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I'm one of those Mac people that loves iMovie. And the question I had is I have a number of mini DV tapes, and I'm trying to look into archiving them because I'm getting nervous about them. And I'm thinking about just buying a large external hard drive. And importing them onto there as a way to store them. Is that an acceptable way? Because looking at making a bunch of DVDs is okay, I thought, but that's compressed. I know you're compressing them.
Yeah.
Is this audio or is this data?
Video.
It's video.
Video, yeah. Okay. Yeah, back a hard drive would probably be the best way because then you can leave them in DV format, mm-hmm. which is still compressed, but less compressed than MPEG on a DVD.
Yeah.
And then do you recommend FireWire or USB 2.0?
Well, FireWire is still faster, has much lower latency if your computer hasn't, and all Macs do. But a lot of hard drives are now supporting USB 2 also because it's more common under Windows because it's cheaper.
Right.
Sure. But it's still slower than FireWire, it has a higher rating to
it. But some of the newer hard drives now, I'm also seeing, and if you've got the connection,
well, a lot of them have both.
SATA. It's SATA.
Well, right. There's a lot of drives coming out now with a quad interface. USB 2, FireWire 400, FireWire 800, and eSATA. And so for current computers, you'd need an external eSATA card. But the FireWire 400 is best. If your computer has 800 on it, then the FireWire 800 drives are even better for speed.
Yep. Okay, well, that does it for another week, folks. I want to thank all the callers that took the time to call in and try to puzzle us with some of the questions. There were some good ones there. But if you didn't get in, all I can say is try again next week when all three of us will be here again. And I want to thank Andrew Welch again from Ambrosia Software for coming in.
And thank you for having me. And I want to say hello to Polly and Kumba.
Okay.
Don't ask.
No, that's okay. That's
Don't
fine.
Ask.
No. And Nick, I hope you actually got some rest this weekend. So again, for Sound Bites, we'll see you next week.